This is Back to Back.
Yo, what's up, Back to Backers? This is Willie Joy. Welcome to the show. This is Back to Back. This is my podcast. Hello, how are you? Welcome. Good to be back with you. I hope everybody out there is doing well. Got a great episode for you today. Eli and Fur are on the show. It was great talking to them. I've just been talking a lot lately in general. You know, yesterday I was on my Twitch streaming for about 3 hours, just talking to music producers, listening to their music, giving out some feedback, cracking jokes, hanging out with a great group of people that I would encourage you to join, by the way, if you are a music producer. And then straight off of that into an hour-long meeting, had a call after that. You know, when I started DJing as a career many, many years ago, I never really thought that so much talking would be involved with what I'd end up doing. So if anybody has any good tricks about not losing your voice, I'm all ears. But this conversation today with Eli and Fur, that put me in a great mood. And look, they've got a brand new album. It's called Found in the Wild. It's out right now, as well as a live version of that album. They did a full live performance, a stream with Insomniac earlier this year. It's really incredible. I talked to them a lot about the live performance in this conversation you're about to hear. And the album is an interesting split between clubbier, more underground tracks, and then the other half is more singer, songwriter kind of songs. Because Eli and Fur, you know, they split the difference between those two sides in a really interesting way. And it was cool to get to talk to them about how they sort of, you know, navigate that, walk that tightrope, and the process of just making their debut album in general. They're on tour right now, so definitely go catch them if they are in your city. And they're going to be putting out a remix package for that album as well. They just dropped the first single off of that package, which is the Marsh remix of Wild Skies. So in the show notes for this episode, you're going to find links where you can go follow Eli and Fur, keep up to date with everything they're doing, see them when they're on tour. All of that is going to be in the link in the description. Also in that description, of course, a link to go follow me on my Twitch, where I record this show live every single week. I'm DJing on there every Thursday. I'm doing feedback streams every Friday. So all my music producers, man, send me your music. I'll play it live. I'll talk to you about it. It's a really good time. Come through Twitch. Come through the Back-to-Back Discord. The link for that is also in the description. And that's where you can find me generally if you need me for anything. So when I caught up with Eli and Fur, they were in their studio out in Los Angeles. Eli had actually spent the bulk of the pandemic in Los Angeles, and Fur had actually gone back to her native land of the United Kingdom. And so they actually spent a lot of the pandemic separate, which for a active touring duo is not a normal thing. I think they said it was the longest they had been apart in something like, I don't know, a decade or something like that. And they wrote some of the album that way as well. We talk about that process. It was a really nice, thoughtful, reflective conversation that we had. I really enjoyed it. I hope you will as well. I hope you're doing good out there, whoever is listening to my voice right now, whether you're at the gym, in the car, at work, at home, or just under the covers trying to pretend the world doesn't exist for a day. I feel you, and wherever you're at, I'm happy we get to share this time together. I hope you enjoy this episode. If you do, if you would like to support this show, just tell a friend. Just let people know you're listening. Maybe recommend one of your favorite episodes. You can always tag us on social media. At Willie Joy, at Back to Back Pod, that's where you can find us. I appreciate all the support. I appreciate all the love. It is absolutely what keeps me going, what keeps me excited about making the show and putting it out for you every single week. And I am very much sending that love back to everybody out there. Much love, much support on anything you're working on, much encouragement. You guys are the best. Enjoy this episode. It's all yours. Let's do it right now. This is me and Eli and Fur back to back. Let's go. So you guys are out in LA, and am I right to assume, I don't know this, but I'm just assuming that you did not spend the pandemic in LA as well?
I spent quite a big bulk of it in LA, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Fur decided to go home as it started to get bad. And I obviously, we never knew how bad it was going to get. But I decided I would stay. And everything locked down, and that was kind of it.
Yeah. Well, it must have been strange. I had a bunch of friends and peers who, of course, got stuck in one country or another, wherever they went home to. It must have been odd for you guys to just be separated for so long. I feel like probably you hadn't been separated for that long in a while, right?
Yeah, I mean,
I think it was the longest time we'd spent apart from each other in years. I think it was 7 months we weren't together.
Yeah.
So that obviously changed things when it came to being in the studio. We had to change the way we worked.
Yeah.
Usually we'd, you know, work in the same room, but we had to adjust. And actually,
weird shift.
Yeah, it was strange to begin with, but I think it was quite good in the end.
Yeah.
We got a lot done.
We were saying that, you know, it's a little, we can distract each other in the studio and like chat. And obviously we're like best mates. So it was a lot, we had to be a lot more focused. And we started to get to the point where we thought, okay, this is a long-term thing, which I think everyone sort of did at the beginning. Everyone was like, ah, nice little break.
You're right.
And then it became very apparent pretty quickly that there was no touring going on, and we suddenly thought to ourselves, okay, this is an incredible opportunity, because we have definitely toured a lot over the years, and we were separated, but you know, we had all these ideas. So yeah, it definitely was a shift dynamically in terms of how we make music. But yeah, as Fur said, it kind of changed things, didn't it, in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, maybe the silver lining of it is that some of us were sort of forced to progress or evolve in some way. So I think pre-pandemic, I don't know if you feel this way, but I think it was so easy to get caught up in kind of the routine of, you know, put a song out, go on tour, summer festival season. And at least for me and some people I've talked to, I'll just speak personally, I would kind of just write songs in the same way over and over. And in a weird way, it was like I had to have everything taken away for inspiration to hit again.
Yeah,
I don't know if it was like that for you.
Yeah, definitely. I think we definitely had a lot of stuff. It's pretty hard for us to get into a creative mind state when being on the road and getting back and being tired. And so that was one thing for sure. But yeah, I think it was a little bit, I definitely struggled with a bit of an identity crisis. Because you essentially are going from being a touring musician making music to then just absolutely nothing.
Yeah. I enjoyed the fact that I could just spend all day, every day in the studio and experiment, you know, without having deadlines. And we were always rushing. It was like a bit of a rat race up until that point, I think, trying to keep up with the release schedule and the gigs.
Yeah.
So for me to like sit down and make something with no means, no deadline, and just create was probably the funnest part for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I think fun is the key word, right? Because I think when this becomes more of a business and money gets involved and it is what you rely on for food and all that, it's easy to forget, I think, that we all started doing this because it was really fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the start of all of this, all of these other concerns weren't even, you know, a spark of a thought in our brains. I think it can be really hard to get back to that. So it's awesome to hear that you're able to kind of find that silver lining. It also made me wonder, you know, you're back on tour now. You're both back in the States, back in the studio together. What was it like for you the first time you came to the States? You know, now you're back, you're reunited there, you're touring again. But when I was doing some research and reading about kind of the timeline of your guys' career, it seemed like the first time you came to the U.S. maybe coincided with some other big landmarks for your career. Like it seemed like maybe it was really catching a spark around that time.
Yeah, I mean, I remember our first US tour.
Yeah, I remember sitting on the plane with you being so excited.
Yeah, yeah. And it definitely, because our career really kicked off with the association to Anjuna Deep. And obviously their fan base is big in the US. And the agent that we had at the time, you know, he reached out to us pretty early on and had wanted to bring us out to America, I think for about a year until we actually did it.
It took a while.
Which was great. It was great to have that support early on by somebody who believed in our success over in the US. And we really both love it over here. it definitely was. We came in with a big tour. I think it was a couple of releases that we'd done that made sense over there. I think alongside Anjuna Deep, or it's hard to think back now. It seems like a long time ago. it was incredibly exciting for us. There's so much music that we love out here, and you know, obviously we're from the UK and have that influence as well. But it's been a dream to tour in America. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think the UK and the US have this sort of odd relationship, especially with dance music, where, you know, dance music originally, you know, house and techno, the origins of it started here in the States, then pretty quickly got imported to the UK. You guys took it, you know, sort of improved it and like made it this bigger thing and kind of shipped it back to us at a certain point. And ever since then, I've always felt that it's always kind of going back and forth. The UK to me always seems to be a little bit ahead. Like you can look to the UK for what is going to come to the US in the next few years. But it's just an interesting relationship. And for you, I mean, it makes me wonder too, growing up in the UK, I'm always envious of things like BBC Radio 1. And just kind of the music culture in the UK in general seems a bit more open-minded and a bit more independent-minded, maybe just a little cooler. I don't know. Did it feel like that growing up? What kind of music was around you growing up?
I mean, it's different. It's really interesting, everything that you just said, just because it is, the markets are so different, but yeah, they do kind of bounce back. Yeah, it can definitely feel quite tastemakery in the UK. But I think growing up, I mean, you can say how you felt growing up, but I think it was definitely, I wasn't as tuned in to what was going on. Now we've been in the industry for, I don't know, 8 or 9, even 10 years. Even longer than that. I mean, not doing the project necessarily, but we've been in the actual industry for a while. And you grow up just like a spring chicken, not really analyzing anything and just having fun and listening to music on the radio, or, you know, going along to a show with your friends or going to a festival and discovering a band. Especially we grew up there wasn't so much social media. We were going to shows before Instagram or anything like that. So
CDs.
It definitely felt, like we look back on it and think, well, we were very naive and green. But in some ways that's great, because I definitely wasn't really on the beat of like what's cool. I was just kind of floating between, you know, listening to stuff I heard on the radio or a band that I saw, or just completely mixed. And you got all your, I mean, it depends how early on, but you got all your inspiration from
my mom.
Your mom.
Yeah. My mom, she's 21 years older than me, and she loved all the 80s stuff. So I grew up listening to her CD collection, which was, you know, sort of like Depeche Mode, that kind of thing. That was, yeah. I don't know. I always go back to that sound. I think I don't know if it's just like a taste thing or it reminds me of being younger, but I'd listen to my mom's music.
It's interesting because I think, I don't know if you would agree, but I could absolutely hear echoes of that in the music you are making now, right? Like not that it sounds like 80s music or that it's new wave, but there's a certain, you know, I think the new wave stuff particularly did such a good job of kind of making like being sad or being dark into a party.
Yeah.
Happy,
that's,
sad.
That's exactly what we're about. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting thinking about the idea. This is just off the top of my head, but the idea of, you know, how much are your influences a conscious part of your songwriting and your production, and how much of it is just kind of in you, you know, something that's ingrained from your mom playing it. Like when you guys are sitting down to write a song, how much do those kinds of influences, whether it's new wave or something else from early childhood, does that come into play consciously, or do you think it kind of just trickles into the way you write music?
Yeah, I think it's subconscious for me. I think it's just ingrained into my soul somehow. And I couldn't put my finger on why I like the sounds I like and why I'd choose, you know, a synth sound I like. But I think it's just like to do with your upbringing, and I don't know, it's really hard to explain, but it's definitely for me. You know, I don't set out in the studio to be like, I want to make this sound. It just happens naturally.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. And often we'll make something completely different than what we usually would do. You know, we might sit down and write something that comes off quite poppy, and then we take it darker often.
Yeah.
So there is that. It is a definitely subconscious lean towards something darker and deeper.
Yeah.
And we have definitely done a lot of pop songwriting and things like that in our career. And we definitely take that, you know, the hook to us is incredibly important. Something that's catchy and, you know, you can hear over and over, but yeah, it's definitely something we lean towards, that darker side of things, and being able to kind of fit on that fence of, you know, not depressing.
It's finding a balance, between happy and sad.
Especially,
I guess that makes you feel something.
Exactly. It's that perfect sweet spot in between, which I think is impossible. It's so hard to do. And, you know, we try really hard. That's definitely something that we consciously do. We want to be able to just give people emotion on the dance floor and elsewhere, and, you know, without crying and eating a puddle of tears.
Right. Yeah. The dance cry is a pretty high level move. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. So right before we got on here to talk, I was watching the live performance you did of the new album of Found in the Wild, and watching that live performance was really interesting, kind of along those same lines, because I wanted to ask you about it, because it was basically something that felt to me very intimate and very emotional, you know, and gripping and very like personal. You know, it was this like subdued kind of, you know, right in your face kind of emotional performance. But then also watching it, you know, if you pull back a little bit, it could easily be a performance on a main stage of a festival as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's maybe that sweet spot you were talking about. And I wanted to ask you about the live aspect of what you do. I know in that recording, you had said that was sort of your first full live show. And to me, just somebody watching it, it seemed like it was pretty fantastic. Do you have plans to kind of expand your touring that way as well?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit up in the air right now. I think there's somewhere in between that and the DJing, something that's, I suppose in this day and age, a little bit more portable at this point. I think we're just getting back into touring now. So, we've been talking about something that's not quite the whole, you know, that's a lot of stuff to take on tour at this point. I think definitely in the future, you know, we've been talking about it. We'll see what happens. But
I think we want to start off with just doing like a handful of sort of intimate shows and just see how people respond, I guess, because... Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of an experiment. We did it in lockdown. You know, we'd rehearse a lot, and it's something we've never really had time to sit down and just focus purely on that.
Yeah. And not done in front of an audience.
Yeah,
either.
Exactly.
So,
that's a little daunting, but exciting. I think that you have to do so many live shows to feel, you know, to really feel the crowd. And we definitely get that from DJing. But yeah, I think somewhere in between would work well. You know, that's quite a full-on setup.
Yeah. Well, not to mention, you know, extremely expensive to bring on the road and all of that kind of stuff. Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see where we are. You know, no one really knows. I mean, we're hoping that we're coming out of this horrendous time, and but hopefully, you know, we can expand things, but we'll see where it's all at in, you know, 6 months or so.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's just interesting because I think your music does such a great job of straddling those lines between live and DJing, between songwriting and club tracks. You know, there's this really interesting duality that I think lends itself really well, not to just the live performance aspect, but also to an album format like Found in the Wild is. And so I think I'm getting the impression from talking to you already that probably, you know, the enforced time off in the pandemic is part of why this album came to be. But had it been something you were thinking about before that as well?
Yeah, it's been a dream of ours for so long. And I guess it just felt like the right time to do it. And we loved making the album. It was so great to be able to put out a body of work that shows the two sides of us.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, our sound is quite varied. You know, we like to write songs, but we also like to make stuff for the club. And that's always been quite tricky for us because, you know, a lot of people in the industry will say to you, well, what are you? Like, where do you fit? And that's always been a bit, we've been asked that question so many times, and we've always like had doubts and worried and been like, but you know, when you're creating, it's just, there's two of us. It's just the way it was nice for us to just not have to try and fit into a box. And obviously it was great releasing it on Anjuna Deep because they were the first label that ever released us and you know, hit us up and said, hey, do you want to do something together? So it just felt like the right home for it. And we had, you know, a good amount of creative control over it. And it just felt like good that we could show the two different styles of what we can do.
Yeah, without confusing things. Yeah. I love that word, duality. I think that's such a perfect word. I think when you're in a duo, we work very well together. I mean, that's why we've been doing it for so long.
Right.
But we, you know, our minds dart from one side to the other. And when you've got all these people trying to sort of fit you in a box, it becomes incredibly limiting. And it's been amazing to see the response from people to these two sides.
Yeah.
Because they know what they're going to get when we do a DJ set, but they also know that if they delve into our catalog of music, they can find something a little bit different. And it feels so liberating to not be constricted by that just lane that you need to stay in. I think if you're a true fan of an artist, you have to be, you know, open to evolving and change and just being broad, I guess, and not limiting yourself to those things. I mean, we love both those styles of music.
Right.
They still, you know, are in the same kind of world, but, you know, it's nice to have something that you can have for both occasions, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but to me, it also sounds like what I'm hearing you say is that, you know, this is sort of just a more complete picture of who you are as artists, right? And I think those kind of tendencies, leaning into that, that's something, even if it's hard for fans to accept at the start, where it's like, why doesn't this sound like the other thing? I think that's the only way, I think, to have a long-term career and to be happy with your long-term career is to really, you know, embrace the totality of who you are as artists, right? Like, to me, there's like almost no other path worth taking.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Just being true to yourself and not feeling restricted creatively. So
yeah.
Go on for longer and hopefully inspire more people.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and you mentioned that you both had a pop songwriting background as well. I want to talk about that in a second. But before we even get there, I wanted to ask, growing up, outside of the music that was surrounding you, were you musical? Were you playing instruments, music history in the family, anything like that?
Do you want to take this one first?
So I played piano as a kid. My parents, no one in my family is musical, really. And I actually studied art and fashion. So I didn't study music at school, and I basically somehow ended up doing music because of Eli. he was working at a songwriting company. I'm going to try and tell the short version of this. I feel like it's just...
Hey, take your time.
but basically, I ended up doing music by chance. And I'm pretty self-taught when it comes to playing. I sing, obviously, and when I got the job with Eli working at the songwriting company, it was, you know, I really got thrown in the deep end, and I had to learn from other producers, you know, Logic, straight in, had not much clue about anything.
Used to like take recording vocal sessions and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
I just have to learn really fast, and I'd quit my job in fashion for this opportunity, and it was really scary to start with because I thought, oh God, like, am I good enough? Like, can I even do this? But I've always loved music, but never really felt like I was confident enough as a child to be like, hey, I want to perform, or you know, So it was pure chance. And yeah, from that day, I just haven't really looked back and just kept growing and kept learning, basically.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, Logic is a tough one to start with. If you're starting from scratch, that's not the friendliest program to hop into.
But, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting too, hearing you say that, you know, you weren't thinking about the performing side of it from the start, because I think a common story is, you know, oh, I was that kid who just couldn't stay off the stage, or, you know, I would perform for my parents' friends, that kind of thing. And it's interesting to think about the idea of coming to that side of it later. How was that for you? How did that evolve, the, you know, becoming a public figure, going up on stage, having eyes on you?
I think definitely being in a duo is what encouraged me to have the confidence to do it, because we'd sort of bounce off each other and encourage each other. So I think, you know, when I was growing up, I was really shy. I would literally cry every time I went to school. and I would definitely not be performing. But I think it's just something that has happened because there's two of us.
Yeah,
I couldn't really see myself as a solo artist.
Mm. And I think it's completely it's a completely fresh take on everything.
And it's been a slow build as well. Yeah. You know, we were never really sort of, we've just been growing. We've been doing this for 10 years. And I think, you know, the more you do it, the more confident you get, the more you want to experiment and grow. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You have me, who was like, loved being in school musicals.
yeah. Well, yeah, Eli, I wanted to ask, does that retelling ring true to you, of you sort of corralling her into this project?
No, you know what? It was like really refreshing for me, because I was like a little kind of musical kid. I mean, I wasn't very confident either. I never really had that much belief in myself, but I learned the guitar from a young age and I wanted to perform. And I studied music technology at school as well, which was great and really helpful. But I think, you know, I was there, you know, in bars playing my guitar, and I wanted to be, you know, tour with a folk band, and I had all these ideas. And obviously at that point I hadn't really got into going to clubs, or I was just a little bit of a late starter. And I think having you know, us doing this project together and getting into DJing together was so integral as well to our journey, because you just had a different take on it. This kind of, you were just more of a party girl. You were more into, you know, going to raves, and I wasn't really, you know, I was just like, my guitar, which was amazing. I loved every part of it, but I think we both pushed each other and kind of had this really different upbringing in terms of music. And that was, and it still is, very special. I think you're a real, like, you spend hours and hours on Bitwig, whereas I'll spend hours and hours on my guitar. Well, hours and hours. I actually have been been touring most of the time. I haven't played the guitar for a while now, but yeah, that's where I go when I want to write something. You know, I go to chords and a vocal, and Fer will play me something that she's made on the weekend. This like just vibey groove with just amazing. I don't know. It's just we come from different places.
Yeah.
And that's what really is just so inspiring when you're in the studio and you're trying to make music. You've just got two completely different takes on it.
Yeah, it's interesting because that makes total sense. I think that's a great, you know, great partnership and sounds like a great way to write music together. But then there's also, at least again, from my outsider's perspective, so many ways in which you are both very complementary to each other, even down to the way your voices sound. Like they sound so great together. And it's, was that part of it? Figuring out how to gel those different influences, the way you sounded, all of that, was that a process as well?
Definitely. Yeah, 100%. You know, when we worked at this music production company, we demo a lot of songs for other people. And that's kind of how we started to experiment with tracking our voices together. And I think it was just lucky the way that my voice is a lot lower. So a lot of the time I'll just do like a warm layer under Eli, or I'll do a verse and Eli's got much more powerful voice for a chorus. But they just work together, and it just creates this thickness to the vocal. A lot of the time we'll, you know, stack vocals, like 10 of the same. And yeah, that's just kind of how we came up with our sound vocally.
Yeah. It's kind of by accident.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll sing something and I'll be like, wait, it has to have both of our voices on it, because it's so true that you have that dark layer. You've got that.
I've got the low end.
I'm like, right. I've got that kind of poppier voice, and you have that kind of darker Depeche Mode kind of like. It's just an interesting. Yeah, they're very different voices, but yeah, a lot of the time that layer is really, really, really works.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's part of the alchemy that makes what you do so unique. But I'm sure you've told this story plenty of times, so feel free to tell the brief version of it. But for anybody who doesn't know, so you are both going to school together, you meet up, you become friends, you're going out to clubs. How does it turn into the idea of, you know, let's actually make something ourselves rather than just experience it?
I don't know. It was just, I actually remember when we came up with it. I think we'd just been out and we got back late. We were flatmates in London. And I think we just said, we should do this. We should play music together. And I think we even said at that point, and we should make music together. But it was just this.
We made a website.
There we go.
I wish we could still see it.
Yeah, it was funny. Oh, man. But yeah, it was just this.
Well, then Brian saw it, I think.
My boss at the time, where we both ended up working together, got kind of wind of the idea. And I think we'd just been DJing parties and things like that, and just been having it. I think what was in some ways got us more gigs and you know, enabled us to do what we're doing, is we were having so much fun together that you know, we just loved it, and everyone was like, oh, you know, you should do this, or you know, we'd play for free wherever, do whatever, you know what I mean. It wasn't a job, it was for fun. And I mean, it's obviously still for fun, but at that point it was just this exciting, like,
we just wanted buzz for it.
Yeah. Mm. And we did it for a while without taking it that seriously. And then we got offered a gig. It's so funny because it was so long ago now that we look back on these things and we're just like, oh, I was all cringy. We were just finding our feet. You know, we didn't know what we were.
We were emailing promoters in London saying, oh, please, will you book us? And, you know, 1 in 10 would come back and say, yeah, okay. And we'd go and do it and we played some pretty, you know, horrible places. But we just kept going. And then one day we got an email from a man asking if we wanted to go to Japan.
Oh, wow.
For a gig, which was actually a whiskey conference. called Whiskey Live.
Yeah. Okay, all right.
And we couldn't believe it. We were like, no, this has to be a joke, really. Like, all the way to Japan. Like, we'd never been to Japan. And we were like, what? Mm. And I was actually still at my job in fashion. And I remember my friend saying, what are you doing this weekend? And I said, I'm going to Japan. And we just went for the weekend. We were just so...
blown away. I think we did three or four gigs
for them. Yeah. Okay. Whilst people were tasting whiskey and cigars.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I mean, it was just so, we suddenly said to ourselves, whoa, okay, this is something that we could, we hadn't even considered that we'd actually be able to do it as a job. And
I mean, it was honestly the most exciting thing, wasn't it?
It was. We were just... I mean,
we couldn't believe it was happening.
Did you have music out at the time? How did the Japanese whiskey people even find you?
Someone wrote up
some PR article
or something. Yeah. I don't remember what it. We were playing a few parties, but yeah, they saw it somewhere.
It was by chance, I think.
Yeah, it was completely by chance. Unusual. They just took a risk and thought, you know, they look like they're having some fun. Let's get them over.
Absolutely.
And it was very professional and very like official. And we had to go around and, you know, do whiskey tasting and present people winners with tickets,
raffle
winners.
Oh, like yeah. That. Yeah. You were doing the, like almost the hosting of it as well.
I love that.
Yeah.
It was a really amazing opportunity. And I think when you get, obviously quite a weird, like not really something that we would do at this point, but you know, it was so early on that I mean we would do it, but it wouldn't probably make sense enough. I mean, I definitely go back. Whiskey, I mean, I love whiskey, so
yeah,
it was just such a cool experience. And that, you know, one of the reasons we love doing what we do is going to play music for people and meet people and just, you know, just see places that we would never normally see and share our music and play our music in those places. That's just such a kick, as well as being able to make music that it feels true to us. You know, there's a lot more to DJing as well, which, you know, was definitely a draw for us at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it sounds like, you know, if you were going out to clubs and getting inspired by this kind of music and having these group experiences, at least for me, I mean, that's part of the appeal of being in dance music is the human connection aspect, right? Yeah. Not just travel and seeing places, which is also amazing, but yeah, meeting people and playing music for people in different places and seeing how they react differently. And I don't know, there's something in, at least for me, speaking as an introvert, there's something in being able to connect with people, you know, outside of just having to just talk to them one-on-one that is really appealing.
Absolutely. 100%.
So true.
So true. Well, is there anything you miss? This just occurred to me. Is there anything you miss from those early carefree days when, you know, just something like a Japanese whiskey company sending you an email is, you know, the most exciting thing in the world and the possibilities are endless? Is there anything in whatever way that means to you that you kind of miss about the early innocent days of it?
Definitely. I think maybe probably the lack of pressure.
Mm.
I think the more you build a brand and you build a fan base, you know, I still get nervous and, you know, am I going to do a good job? Is this going to go well? And, you know, I mean, it's probably for not very long, just before kind of going on stage, there's just that feeling of it's not the same as being at the beginning of your career and playing to about five people. And it's a little bit more, you have to really, really push yourself, I think. Well, me personally, to take risks. Because sometimes you feel, you know, there's an expectation, I think, sometimes. But I also think that's in my head. I think everybody's there to have a good time, and that's just a little bit of paranoia. But there is some, you know, those were some fun days. You know, I remember getting in the car after playing, I don't know, our first or our second or third paid gig and outside the UK, I think it was in Essex. And we played to about four people.
Yeah.
And we were really happy with how it went. And we got into the car and I remember just being like, ah!
Yeah.
You know, I think that was just, you look back on that and you're like, oh, that's just, you know,
cute.
Yeah, it was cute.
Cute. And I'm sure now it's harder to feel that level of excitement, right? Like you need more to feel that feeling.
You get to that's the thing about human nature, isn't it? You get to a certain stage and you want more and you want more and you want, you know what I mean? And you can get disappointed, and you know, especially if you've been doing it for a long time, you know, you can go through stages of, you know, feeling, am I good enough, which you don't really feel at the beginning because you're just like, I know I'm not good enough, but I've got some time to get there.
Right, exactly. And everything is new, everything's the first time. Yeah, there is something really beautiful about that. Well, and usually I save this for kind of the end wrap up, but because we're talking about it, have you found ways to keep it fun for yourself, to keep, you know, the excitement, the enjoyment, to find some of those innocent moments again in your career at this point? Like, what is exciting for you right now? How do you keep it fun?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think the feeling of playing music to people and, you know, making a connection with someone in the crowd, you're not even having a conversation with, but it's like a feeling that for me, doesn't get old.
So true.
You know, and it might be the tiniest thing that happens, like some vibe with someone in the crowd or someone says something to you, or I don't know, just eye contact or whatever it is. Like,
Someone having the best.
Yeah, time. I love that feeling. Like that never gets old for me. So I guess I just kind of ride off those moments.
Yeah, I mean, to make someone's night is just the most amazing feeling. Because that's where you get into it, to inspire people. And I think the fact that we have more people listening to our music now, and we've still obviously got a lot ahead of us and a lot of goals that we want to achieve and a lot more that can be done, but I think we definitely have reached a point where we really know ourselves. And I would say the negative points of the early on stages of a career, especially when you're kind of growing up in it, you don't really know yourself completely until you hit a certain age. And we were kind of navigating that from a really early point. So we went through these, you know, what are we? Or, you know, and when you have managers and you have early people that you meet and you kind of feel that the music industry is this big, scary place and you're not really sure what to do. And I think a sense of, we enjoy it a lot now because we have a sense of ourselves and what we want.
Yeah.
That makes total sense. And
that age
that
and
takes
experience,
a long time. Yeah.
But I think we definitely have, I mean, we still analyze things and go over things and try and figure things out, but sometimes I think it's a big collection of luck and who you meet and where, you know, certain opportunities that you get that get you up the ladder. So, and I think it's accepting that and not really, I think a lot of the time you go through your career trying to find a formula and trying to figure out what exactly you should do with this record or where exactly you should play.
Yeah.
But sometimes things surprise you and sometimes things just happen without you even predicting them.
I feel like that's most of the time, right?
Exactly. There is no formula. I'm always trying to, should we do this? Would this work? Should we do this? It's just these questions. I don't think we ask them as much as we used to, you know?
How young were you when you started, like when the project kind of became official?
22.
Mm. Yeah. So still very, very young. I mean, it's really interesting to think about growing up as people while the project grows up, you know, as a project at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so funny because a lot of people rebrand themselves, and we sometimes thought about doing that and changing things and, oh, should we do this and that? But I think in some ways it's kind of beautiful to have this journey that is not hidden, or we're not trying to, you know, it's all kind of out there. You can go back and all the way back to our early tracks, which I'm not afraid of that. I think rebranding is always a good thing to do, and to revamp things. And but you know, it is all still Eli and Fur. So that journey has been nice to kind of, you know, share, and it's still all there. You know?
Yeah, not try to hide it, because I think, you know, using the word rebranding, I'm sure we've all seen artists try to do, you know, the official rebrand where everything gets deleted like it never existed. And, you know, this new thing, we're all supposed to pretend that, you know, this is brand new and there's no history behind. But to me, it's always funny the way people do that. I think your approach is much better, just leaning into the authenticity of it, that because your audience, you know, is growing and changing with you, right? Like, yeah. As a listener, you're not always going to want the same thing your entire life either.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think, I mean, you know, it works for some people, that like fresh start, but I think, you know, it's never been too far away from what we're doing. And, you know, it's all a learning curve. And I think it's nice to be able to share that with people and show that to people. And, you know, no one knows themselves inside out. No one knows exactly what they want all the time. And yeah, as you said, everyone's tastes change as you go through life. So.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's cool to put that on display, like we've been saying, but I think also to sort of just lean into the fact that we all are changing people. Like, I kind of chuckled earlier when you were saying, you know, early managers or early promoters asking you, you know, where do you fit in? What kind of, you know, what kind of music do you make? Which is always the worst question. Because I think everybody always wants to define you or define the things you make. And it always means different things to different people. And I think it's very easy, again, speaking just solely from personal experience, to get caught up in what you think other people want or what you think other people think you are. And to me, it's almost better to leave the history out there, almost just as a reminder, you know, little signposts of how you got there.
Yeah, absolutely. So true.
How did you, Eli, you know, to talk about the pop songwriting background, how did you get into that work in the first place? Had you been, you know, before you started doing it as a job, had you been writing songs on your own, just on the guitar?
So I've been writing stuff, but it was definitely more kind of indie, folky, just stuff that I grew up listening to at that time when I was about 18. And that was, you know, what was like, you know, the White Stripes were my favorite band, and I loved the Strokes, and I loved, you know, it was that kind of time. And I wanted to do something like that. And then I was going to go to uni to do like a commercial music course, which I nearly did. And actually I had this CD that I made. And it's so funny because I have to give all the credit to my dad, who posted the CD through a letterbox of this, this songwriter. and it was like someone that, you know, he'd been told about. Anyway, posted it through the letterbox, and she got in contact with me and said, hey, do you want to come down to the studio and do some work experience after you leave school for the summer or whatever? And I went there, and then suddenly I was thrown into this pop house, which was completely different to what I was listening to at the time, because, you know, I was, you know, on my guitar. I didn't want to listen to any pop music. I mean, right. That is, I guess, those bands that I mentioned are technically pop music. But anyway, I thought I was a real rocker.
And well, then, yeah, it doesn't feel like it at the time, right? We can look back and be like, oh, they were just writing pop songs. But at the time, it's this new exciting scene that, you know, feels like something that you own, you know?
Exactly. And like, I went down there and just kind of just fell in love with it and fell in love with how they worked. And that was just kind of where I stayed, and I didn't go to uni. And then that's when we started living together, when you were studying fashion and art. And so I would go and tell her all these stories about it. And we talk about that kind of that link to that, you know, you got really interested in it, and we were really interested in doing stuff together. And that's kind of how it all happened. But yeah, that's, I just was making coffee and, you know, burning CDs and organizing things, and basically was like a PA for a while. And then finally I started to get opportunities to write and do a few backing vocals and things like that. And it turned into a job, which was great.
Mm. Yeah, it's almost unexpected, I would imagine. Like, we were talking about how you can never plan these moments, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. But it is kind of funny. It is. There is also kind of cliche making tea in the music music company and working my way up.
Yeah.
Get a chance to write a song. It was kind of like that. But at that age, I was incredibly. I just wanted any job in music. I was just ready for it.
Yeah, I had a very similar studio assistant job that did not turn into anything more. But it was the exact same thing: making coffee and vacuuming the studio after somebody was in there and all that kind of stuff.
You still learn so much from it, don't you? You can just to be around that and to hear the conversations and kind of just be in that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And just kind of understanding how it actually gets done, right? Because I think it's so hard when you're just a listener and you're just a fan who wants to be involved. There's no real, you don't know how it all happens, how the music actually gets to you. You know, you just see the artists on the stage, you know, get the CD of their music, or nowadays you stream their music, but that's about it. There's no way to figure out how any of the rest of it happens.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, did either of you have any inspiration, speaking of that, when you really started taking the project seriously? And it was becoming a thing. Was there anyone, any mentors, any inspiration, anyone you could actually look for to figure out maybe these are things we should be doing?
We definitely got into Ableton because of Kink.
Hmm.
We went to a Kink show at the very beginning, and we just saw the way he performed live. And that was really inspiring to us. We literally went home and downloaded Ableton. we're going to use Ableton.
that wasn't it.
He was doing a live set with Ableton.
Yeah. So he was doing, exactly. And we were using Logic at the time to make music, because we were in the studio and doing vocal sessions at Xenomania, where we worked. And then we were using the studio in the evening. So, and that, I think, was when, and
we just spend our evenings, like, as soon as we'd finished writing the pop stuff, and it was the end of the day, we'd then just, you know, learn and figure out what we wanted to do.
Mm. And they let us stay at the studio, which was nice.
We practically lived at the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot.
Yeah, but that was definitely as well quite a good learning curve in terms of seeing how the industry worked. Mm-hmm. You know, being in the office there and kind of writing songs for, I suppose, in terms of songwriting, that was a really helpful way of writing, because it kind of takes you out of your box. And we were just writing hooks, just constant hooks, you know, on one backing track. This is in the pop stuff, on one backing track. You know, we do 50 hooks, and we'd send them to our boss at the time, and he'd listen to them and he'd whittle them down, and then they would, you know, pick, okay, this is the bridge, this is the chorus, and then you'd lyric that. So it was very formulaic and you know, not necessarily very organic, or
it
that
was,
inspiring.
It was like a factory.
Yeah. But we did take that into
and apply it to our thing,
in some ways. Yeah. in a slightly more creative and freeing way. But it was really interesting to just kind of let yourself go on these tracks. I mean, that's a lot of the time. Sometimes we'll sit down with a guitar or we'll sit down with chords and we'll write, you know, verse, bridge, chorus. We'll do that, or we'll just write a hook if it's just kind of a clubby, we just need one hook that we think is going to work over and over. But also there's a way where we'll have a track and we'll just sit down with headphones and just like hum for an hour and then just chop everything up and focus in on those parts that we really hear the emotion and try and string those together.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like the pop songwriting, it's almost like going to the gym, right? It's almost that, you know, the repetitiveness of it, you kind of just exercise those muscles. And I would imagine for songwriting these days are able to work a lot more efficiently because of it.
Yeah, definitely. It's a different way of working, but it really does bring out, you're almost just kind of bleeding yourself from every single melody that you have, which is, it is like putting you through your paces, isn't it?
Yeah.
Eventually there's nothing left in you.
Right. And you need to get away from it and then come back and hopefully surprise yourself.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, it makes me wonder, has the way you write songs together evolved and changed over time? What does the songwriting process look like for you now as compared to when you started?
That's a really good question. We write pretty much the same, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Trying to think if anything's changed.
I sort of go through phases of writing lots and then not writing for a while.
That helps sometimes.
Yeah, because I find if I try and write a lot all the time, I end up not feeling it.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it's good to step away and focus on like production and stuff, and then
come back
when you feel something or something happens in your life that inspires you, then sit down.
I tell you that, don't I? I'm like, oh my God, I have to write something right now. Like there'll be nothing for a month and suddenly it's just this feeling where I have to, like, and then you have to have those backing tracks or those instrumentals or those chords to go to.
Yep.
Because I find it a little bit, I mean, sometimes writing together on the guitar works, but often just getting that melody out over something that you already know you're inspired by instrumentally.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really good tip for any producers out there, really just doing the work, putting in those hours, right? Maybe not knowing what it's for, you have to sort of prepare for when that inspiration hits so that when it happens, you know, you're ready to capture it. Because I think sometimes if the creativity hits and you're not ready for it, it can kind of go either way, right? Like, it's sometimes it's not easy to put what's in your head into the software, into the DAW, unless you have sort of practiced doing that already.
Totally.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, you know, musically, is there a vision for your music that you haven't realized yet? Like, is there like a final form of Eli and Fur that you feel like you're working towards?
I think somewhere in the middle of found in the wild.
Mm.
I think the next thing that we'll do will probably be, just because we've been in the studio a lot and it seems to be going that way, this sort of almost in between, you know, strong electronic,
like
a fusion of both, that kind of sits in the middle there. That's kind of weirdly where we're hearing things are going. It's not necessarily guitar, you know, live guitar. It's more, I don't know. It's a fusion. I would say a fusion of that. Let's see what happens. I mean, we always keep an open mind,
right?
But hopefully something that sits in between the two in a nice coherent way, which is not to say that we won't do the same format at some point, but I think we're focusing more on EPs and things like that. So, and I think touring's coming back. So we do have the club in mind. But yeah, we always want to be able to play these tracks out that have our vocals on them and have that emotion.
Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, how has it been going back on the road playing shows again now that the album's out and people have had time to react to it and to form a relationship with it? Does playing gigs feel different coming back to it with the album out and with these kind of new revelations about, you know, broadening your artistic horizons a little bit?
It's definitely been different for me because I got quite sick 2 years ago. And I got diagnosed with fibromyalgia. I'm not sure if you're aware of
that. I do know that. A friend's mother had that, yeah.
Yeah, so I've been only doing one show a month just because my physical health isn't great. So obviously Eli's been amazing and has been, you know, touring a lot also by herself. But I was quite surprised when I did start touring again, just because I hadn't played these songs to anyone.
Right.
So it was quite emotional for me to see people know the words and stuff like that. I was really blown away by that.
Yeah, that was really, really cool. I mean, I think there was a couple of times that we did the album launch in London together, and it was just, we did it, like, looked at each other and people were singing the words, and it was a really nice moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really nice. And a lot of the, you know, we have the remix package coming out.
So excited about that, yeah.
Which we've been playing, you know, a lot of the tracks that we play in our DJ sets, you know, aren't obviously the found side of the album. They're, you know, remixes. Everything's remixed. So yeah, it's nice to be able to play with that as well, and have these vocals that people know, but these new versions of them and edits and things like that is kind of special because it's something that only people get to see when they come and see us.
Yeah, okay. I love that. I mean, first of all, I'm sorry you've been dealing with that. I know just from my friend's mother had fibromyalgia, and it seemed like one of those tricky diseases where it's hard to diagnose, hard to treat, all of that. And yeah, that really sucks. And I'm sorry you're dealing with it. That plus the pandemic must have been a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but in some ways, actually, you kind of started. I mean, it was a good rest, a good break for you as well.
Yeah, I needed that break. I would have had to take that break anyway.
Mm, yeah, fair enough. Had you been dealing with it before the pandemic hit a little?
Yes, so I did.
You just started feeling that way, didn't you?
It happened in July before the pandemic, so 6 months before. And yeah, it was really scary. It's been a bit of a rough ride, but you know, Eli's been incredible.
Well, it's good that there are two of us, but also, you know, well, I'll be on the road and Phil will be able to, you know, stay and make music. So in some ways it's worked in a great way because I'm just lucky that there's the both of us.
Yeah, absolutely. And how do you feel about, you know, fibromyalgia aside, about the live aspect of it? Like, what's the most, maybe, actually, I'll ask this to both of you and you can answer separately. What's the most fun part of what you do? You know, whether it's the live shows, whether it's producing, whether it's writing lyrics, whether it's, you know, seeing people's reactions. What is the most fun part?
I guess just being independent for me and, you know, not having a boss.
That's a great answer.
And just, just creating. I'm a creative. I just create all the time. And that's definitely the best part for me is just the fact that I can just create.
Yeah. Mm. And I would say definitely being able to make music as a job is incredible. But I think my favorite part is when I just those moments at shows playing that music and the reaction, and just when you're kind of at one with the crowd and you have that feeling, and it's just incredible. It's just so much fun to be able to lose yourself in that, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And you had mentioned the remix album coming out for Found in the Wild. Is there anything you're able to share about that? Is there a release date or anybody who's working on it?
How much can we share?
That's fine too. But
yeah. We hit up some of our favorite producers and asked, you know, would you guys be up for doing a remix? And yeah, there's two in there that I'm really excited about.
I mean, we can probably say. I mean, there's one that I guess we've been playing out, which is Fur Coat, who did a remix of Broken Parts.
Nice.
I don't know. Like, if we're, I don't really know what the rule is if we can announce stuff. I mean, I don't think anyone really cares.
Yeah.
but I think we've got something coming from
Maya Jane Coles.
Oh, yeah. Amazing!
Because she's a mate of ours. We also just such big fans of her sound, and that was like a dream come true. She's done a remix for us before, but this one's slightly different, and she's kind of just taken it to a different level, which is, especially for the club, it's just
a dream. She's incredible.
And then Marsh as well, from who's done a lot of stuff with Anjuna Deep. So that's really cool. So, and then there's a couple more on there, but we're really excited about it.
That's,
and, you know, we've been playing them out, hammering them in the clubs. And then obviously we've done a few edits ourselves.
Yeah. We've done a remix too. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's exciting. We can't wait to share that.
It's happening. No, that's great. And yeah, I'm sure a lot of people are going to be excited about that. Is there anything, you know, as we're starting to wrap it up, is there anything else coming up, anything else you want to let people know, anything we didn't cover up until this point?
I think it's just so nice that we're getting back on the road and we're doing shows. Mm. Obviously Ferbs is doing as many as she can, but it's exciting to be busy and to be in these different cities, and yeah, I guess just more music. Next year will be the plan, another EP, just continuing to try and get something out every 3 months, really, at the least.
At the least.
Do you see more albums in your future at some point?
Definitely.
I mean, an album a year would be incredible, but it just depends on timing. We definitely got a lot of timing, but at the same time, we have still got some stuff that we wrote in the pandemic, which hasn't been finished yet. So we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, definitely another album for sure. Yeah.
And as we are wrapping it up, first of all, just thank you for doing this. It's been really nice talking to you both.
Thanks, Thomas. It's great to just chat about everything. And, you know,
I love it. And yeah, I would love to have you back anytime, do a part two. But I wanted to make sure, just to very quickly cover, you know, you mentioned your relationship with Anjuna as well. And as we were talking, you know, we mentioned a couple times the sort of not fitting in with one particular style or sound. But then as we were talking, I kind of realized that maybe in some ways the Anjuna umbrella is, because they put out all kinds of interesting music that's sort of all over the spectrum. Does it feel a bit full circle to come back and release the album with them?
Definitely. And I think they've also changed as a label as well. They've just developed and have been around for a long time. So the way that they are in that sense is similar to how we are. It's definitely a really nice full circle thing, seeing as our early releases, one of our earliest releases was with them. So they were a perfect fit for that. And we want to continue that relationship with them, because it just makes sense for us, and we love what they're doing, and they're just very supportive of up and coming artists. I love what they're doing with, you know, this, they're doing a tour that's specifically just new acts and giving people the chance to shine, and that's amazing for any label. There's a lot of labels that it's just impossible to get in with. It's just, they have their crew and that's that. And I think, and now especially where we've had 2 years of hell for up and coming artists. You know, it's been hard for us, not saying
yeah,
you know, we're
it's
still
been tough.
We're, you know,
yeah.
we're established, we're not at the top of our game, but I, you know, people who are just starting out and starting to get the buzz, and then suddenly everything disappears for a label to then take on tour these acts that are in that position is just amazing. It just shows that they care about new talent, they care about creativity, they let us do what we want to do. It's just a great relationship. And I just think it's a lot, I have a lot of respect for them, the way that they do things, for sure.
Yeah, I have a huge amount of respect for them. And I think it's so rare, you know, talking about the tours for upcoming artists and really any cultivation of the artists who are signed to you. Because I think, especially in 2021, it can feel like the label is just doing you a favor at this point, right? By releasing your music. I think most artists, I would say more than 50%, have that experience somewhere in their career where, yeah, maybe you're trying to get on a big label and it finally happens and it's not quite what you think because, the label more or less just acts like they're doing you a favor. And it's very rare to find a label that actually cultivates a culture and feels like a family. And I don't know. I just wanted to give them a shout out because I thought it was cool that you guys were back releasing with them.
Definitely. It's great.
Well, okay. So to wrap this up, I'm going to ask you two quick questions. One is very silly. One is less silly. But the silly one first. This is actually from someone who's been watching. This is from Emily in Brighton, UK. And this one, I'm just going to ask it. I don't even know how I can preface this question. But Emily asks, would you rather have a nose for a belly button or a belly button for a nose?
I love these kind of questions.
I'd rather my belly button was a nose.
Yeah. 100. Wait, but does that mean that your belly button is on your nose?
That's my question. I think that's what that means.
Wait. Oh, no, it can't be because if you're going to swap. No. I think definitely nose. Belly button. No. Have a nose on your belly button. Yeah.
I think that's right.
Would you still have a nose?
God, yeah, I have a lot of questions about this question. I think we have answered that to the best of our ability.
Definitely the nose for the belly on the belly button.
I'm with you.
It's a hide.
Yeah. All right. And the final question of this is the same question I ask at the end of each one of these episodes. And I'll ask each of you individually, just looking for a time in your life, a memory, a moment. It could be from any time in your life when in a single moment, music really deeply affected you, really had a deep impact on you in that moment. And that's meant to be a very broad question. There's no wrong answer. Doesn't have to be a significant moment. Kind of just the first thing that pops into your head.
So for me, probably I was dating someone who made a series of three tracks about a road trip we went on together. And that was like very romantic. And B, it was just amazing because a lot of the sounds in the music was related to the road trip. And it was just like, it's a piece of music in time for me that I can always go back to. And yeah, I just thought it was super cute. And I loved the music. But B, I just thought it was such a special thing to do.
I love that. I mean, that's, music obviously is so tied to our memories and to nostalgia and those moments. And I've talked to other people about this too. I think as people who make music, that's almost what we're always trying to get back to, right? Is whatever it was that made us feel like that in the first place.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. Well, Eli, how about you?
You know, it's so funny. I probably have so many, but it just came into my head. I'm like a massive Lana Del Rey fan. And I remember seeing her live at Coachella. And she just put out the song West Coast, which I can't remember how long ago that was, but a few years back. And I'd never heard it before, and she sung it for the first time there. And I remember at the time just how I was feeling, and that it was, we were in California, and it was just this kind of, it was just the most incredible performance. And I just remember it just blowing me away.
Yeah.
And just feeling, just, I remember just, I just got so emotional. It was just, and the wind was blowing and the lights were incredible.
Sunset.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was, yeah, it was just, I think seeing a song live by an artist that you really love
and you haven't heard it before,
and you've never heard it before for the first time you hear it live. I mean, oof. I just think about that every time I hear it. I have goosebumps thinking about it.
Yeah. You almost just gave me goosebumps. Absolutely.
But yeah, I just love how poetic her music is. And it's so nostalgic. I love like how she can get so much I feel her songs can make me feel, I remember all the time when I, where I am and what I was doing when I was first hearing those songs, yeah. When I was obsessed with those songs. And I just remember that, that was, that really had a big, big impact on me for sure.
I love that. I mean, sometimes the right song finds you at the right time in the right place, soundtracking the perfect moment for the environment. I mean, again, that's, I think, something we're kind of, as music makers, that's what we're addicted to, right, is chasing those moments.
Yeah, yeah, so true.
Definitely.
So true. And creating those moments for other people is, you know, I'd love to make somebody feel how I felt in that moment. So,
yeah,
that's the goal.
Absolutely. No, that's beautiful. I don't think I could have wrapped it up any better than that. I mean, it makes me think about what we were talking about at the start of you know, where does inspiration come from? How does creativity work? And it's the sum of all those moments, right? That kind of just pour into whatever our creative vessel is. And then something comes out of it and we just got to be ready to try to catch it. I love that.
So true.
Well, thank you. I'm talking too much here, but thank you for,
<That's great. laughs>
thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it. I really enjoyed talking to you both. And really excited for the next chapter.
Yeah, and it's amazing. Thanks for doing these things. I think it's so great to be able to have these conversations and be able to, I mean, look back on them and I think it's great. So,
Thank you. Well, that means a lot. I really appreciate that. And anytime you want to come back, you're more than welcome.
Amazing.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, great to meet you as well. Hope you have a great rest of your day.
Amazing. You too.
Okay, bye.